Chapter 7, 2003, Part 2. The next problem, because there are always more problems, is Thor, again. Steve thinks at first that they might be able to escape unscathed, that they've seen the last of him, that he'll confine himself to making the rounds of the news shows, ranting about government misuse of the Ultimates. The team's next few missions, in fact, seem to have been designed to make Thor look even more unhinged, as they are ridiculously low stakes as these things go. Suicide bombers, drugs, hostages. Steve even rescues a kid from a burning building. Sure, then Jen ends up on another one of those news shows explaining that all their missions are important, thank you very much, but Steve thinks privately it's a relief. Considering that their major missions so far have been the Chitauri invading the Earth and the Hulk wrecking Manhattan, well, he could use a little less of that. Even Tony seems happier now that they're going small scale for a bit. They start to relax. Tony's going to chemotherapy. He has to explain to Steve what it is first. It seems screwed up that he's paying doctors to poison him and that somehow that's his best chance of eking out a little more time. Steve tries not to check in on Tony's mind while he's being treated. He feels like he'd just be in the way. He wouldn't be able to help. He doesn't know what to do. Tony sits there while they put poison in him, while they irradiate him. Tony comes back from his appointments and vomits. He can't think about it. He tries not to. And then the news comes in. There's been a protest in Rome, 500,000 people in the streets angry about rumored European super soldiers. It turned violent as they clashed with police, and then it turned even worse as Thor showed up. With lightning. So much for his goddamn pacifism. This is also how Steve finds out that the rumored European super soldiers are in fact real, and that Tony's already met them.
You didn't ask, darling, Tony says. I've had a lot on my mind lately.
True enough. He knows Tony's been up to a lot. Tony spent nights working on Natasha's suit, a suit just like he has, flying armor for the Black Widow. He's seen Tony sketching it out, working through the nausea. Tony's somewhere behind him with the rest of the Ultimates as Brian Braddock, Captain Britain, shakes Steve's hand enthusiastically. Everyone here just absolutely loved Tony, Braddock says. We've all been very excited about meeting you too, Captain. Did you know I used to have a poster of you on my wall? Yeah, Steve's heard it all before. At least people like Tony. That makes him happy. It's a little strange, maybe, but it does. They meet Captain Spain, Captain France, and Captain Italy, and then they find out why they're here. Thor. Gunnar Gollmann, a researcher from Norway's super soldier team, gives them the truth in grim detail. He outlines how their goal was for the super soldier to be Thor. Rather than serum, they'd use technology. They'd made a belt and a hammer. Together they gave the wearer the power to do everything they'd seen Thor do. Flight, super strength, even teleportation. Of all the super soldiers we've designed here, Gunnar says, Thor was unquestionable the most formidable and would have been the leader were it not for my lunatic brother. He winces artfully. Obviously you've all met Thorleif, or Thor, as he's been calling himself since he stole the damn hardware. Steve remembers Thor's words, where Thor had laid the blame. My evil half-brother Loki, he'd said. This is Thor's real brother, hardly evil at all. Gunnar goes on to explain Thor's theft. 18 months ago, when the Ultimate started, Thor stole everything, all the gear. That's what makes him Thor. He's a fake. He's a fake and he's crazy. Tony was the one who told Steve to give Thor a chance, but now, it doesn't look like Tony's in any mood to be merciful. Tony is wide-eyed and his mind is full of stunned betrayal. Steve knows Tony liked Thor. He knows Tony's taking it hard. But this is reality and even Tony knows it. It's impossible to deny. If Thor was running around with stolen goods, Tony asks, why didn't you do something before now? Fury snorts. Like what? Thor was designed to be the most powerful superhuman on the planet. That belt protects him from even psychic attacks. Were you gonna take him down? Of course, that's exactly what Fury wants them to do now. Bring him in now, tonight. They'll be working with the European team and they'll have, as Fury puts it, conventional people backing them. Tony raises a hand. I'm sorry, I don't know if I can do this. Steve can tell exactly what Tony means by that, of course. The image burned into his mind is Bruce lying prone on the deck minutes before the bomb.
Not again, Tony says. Not again, I can't. Jesus, I can't. He's my friend, Steve.
Steve pushes back reassurance, or tries to.
We have to. It's the right thing to do. He's sick, his brother said. We can get him the help he needs. And I'll have your back, Tony. We'll bring him in safely.
There is a weak pulse of acknowledgement.
Okay.
I don't want it any more than you do, Fury says. But the guy's becoming a serious problem. Tony nods once, firmly. Order received. Steve turns back and meets Tony's eyes.
Suit up, Iron Man.
This is going to be a fucking mess, Steve thinks. It is indeed a fucking mess. At least Thor has the decency to let the civilians get out of the way first. They try to bring him in peacefully. Steve's boots crunch through the snow and moonlight casts scattered shadows on the winter-bare trees of the forest as they come out into the clearing. They're giving him one last chance.
Don't you see? Thor asks, wild-eyed. You're being tricked, deceived by my evil half-brother. He can shuffle time and space. He just made all this up.
Thor, for God's sake, Tony says. Thor's babbling, trying to explain, turning to Steve, imploring.
Cap, make them listen to me, huh?
Steve hefts his shield.
Sorry, you're nuts and you're going down.
And then Thor is summoning storms, fire and lightning, and then Steve is knocked back first in the initial volley, battered by the elements as he slides 50 feet back through the snow. He can feel Tony gasping, trying to breathe through Steve's pain.
Steve, are you okay?
Fine, Steve says.
Just got the wind knocked out of me. Do the same to him, why don't you?
Aye, aye, Tony says. Steve can see the suit controls come up in front of Tony's face as he rearranges the power distribution. He's getting ready, but he's not quite there. Luckily, they aren't alone.
Get his belt, Steve yells at the rest of the team. Get his belt, that's the source of his powers.
He sees the blur that is Pietro moving in. 500 miles an hour and Thor still knocks him back. Shit. One by one, the rest of the team take their turn. Jen, wasp size, somehow ends up, oh god, in Thor's mouth. They can all hear her yelling, don't swallow, over the comms. Poor Clint hardly even stands a chance with only a bow. Thor throws Captain Britain into Wanda and Pietro and they go down in a heap. Then Tony's up, meeting Thor in the skies as Thor takes flight. The darkness glows with Tony's repulses, with the lights on Thor's harness reflecting onto the dazzling snow. On the comms in his head he can hear Tony pleading with Thor, asking him to surrender.
You have to understand, Thor yells over the wind. Fury's information was just Loki screwing with the reality. None of that stuff is real.
Tony raises his hands. He's aligning a repulse array.
I'm sorry, Thor.
Tony's voice crackles over the comms.
I just don't believe you. And I'm sorry too, Thor says.
His voice is slow, dark, final. He raises the hammer over his head and lets it fly. It hits Tony dead on in the chest. Steve has a split second to contemplate S.H.I.E.L.D.'s dire warnings about soul bonds and pain transfer before it all comes down on him. Dimly, he's aware of Tony flipping backwards, losing altitude, but all he can feel is a hot, shattering, cracked line across his chest. God, how many ribs did Tony just break? The pain is a heavy red mist falling across him. The pain is the only thing that exists. It feels like his entire body just dented in. He's lying in the snow, coughing, gagging. He can't think, he can't move, he can't do anything.
Tony, fine darling,
Tony sends back, but the bond between them is a loop of fire circling back on itself, everything opened up into agony. Tony hits the snow not too far from Steve, with another rattling burst of excruciating pain, and skids back, coming to rest at Steve's feet. Steve takes a ragged breath and drags himself across the snow to Tony's side.
Tony, he rasps, hold on, it's going to be okay, we can get you to the medics, just hold on, please.
Oh God, it hurts so much, everything hurts. Jesus, if the shield pain test had involved the doctor stabbing Tony instead, they'd both have been benched for good.
I'm fine, Tony repeats. I'm fine, I'm okay, I've got this. Don't panic, sweetheart. See, I'm already feeling better.
And sure enough, with the next breath the pain seems to lessen. Maybe Tony's got some kind of medical setup in his suit. Maybe it wasn't as bad as Steve thought.
Okay, Steve says. You stay there. You keep getting better, okay?
He pushes forward what he hopes is reassurance, smoothing the sharp thorns of the pain that still blossoms like fire. It feels somehow like he's cooling it. He's not quite sure if that's real. There's too much else to focus on right now. Tony raises a hand.
Okay, can do. You take care of that.
He points upward. Steve looks up and sees that Natasha, sleek and deadly in the armor Tony made her, is in the skies. Repulses glow around her, shining, reflecting of the dark metal of her armor. It's one of Tony's Iron Man suits, custom made for the Black Widow, controlled by the same nanomachinery Tony uses. That means she's just as strong as he is. Natasha streaks forward, firing, and bowls Thor over. Their first hit. Okay, they can do this. Natasha needs backup, he yells into the comms and gestures the European team onwards. Go! The rest of the fight is rough, but he and Tony are basically out of it for the duration. He manages to save some of the regular soldiers from the tree Thor fells while Tony lies panting in the snow. It's not enough. The reinforcements fall and Thor is rising into the skies, lightning crackling around him.
I came here to save the world, Thor roars into the darkness, and all you've done is try to crucify me.
God, he's going to kill them all.
Well, Tony breathes, a pained and crooked thought. It was nice knowing you, darling.
Steve can just barely see movement at the perimeter. Wanda and Pietro. Pietro's movements are slow, labored, but he's the only chance they've got. Steve watches Pietro push himself up and then fall back into the snow. They have no chance. Wanda switches off her comms, crawls over and whispers something in her brother's ear, and Pietro rises. Thor is still ranting.
You're going to die for this, Loki. You hear me, trickster? This charade you've created ends now.
Caught up in his madness, Thor's not even watching. He has no idea what's coming, but Steve can see it. Pietro runs, leaps, and collides with Thor at full speed. The belt is ripped away. Powerless, Thor hits the ground and slides down a mountainside. They did it. It's over.
Come on, Steve insists. Let me see. Not looking at it isn't going to make it any better.
No, Tony says, and he knows Tony's groaning.
But sometimes delaying the inevitable makes me feel better, darling.
Steve's at the Triskelion, finishing up the last of the reports and waiting for confirmation that Thor is safely in one of the same underground cells that had held Bruce. The reports have taken about twice as long as usual, because all he's aware of is Tony in his armor, surrounded by the machines and technicians that are pulling him out of it, panel by panel. As each piece comes off, the pressure on Tony's chest shifts in new and distracting ways. Steve can feel it tapped out on his own chest. It's in his neck, too, a throbbing ache, more localized, but no less painful. And okay, he's just playing concern for Tony. He saw that hit. He felt that hit. He needs to know how much damage they're working with here. He tries to tell himself that he's only concerned as the leader of the Ultimates, but even he's not buying that one. Down the bond, Tony smiles a pulse of amusement.
I'm touched, darling.
So he likes Tony. So what? Isn't it okay if he wants Tony to be his friend? Tony's his damn soulmate after all.
Yeah, yeah.
Steve sends back.
Come on, look down, show me.
The S.H.I.E.L.D. medics gave Tony enough drugs to down a horse as soon as the danger was over. Steve can't feel the agony anymore, so Tony must be blocking some of it from hitting the bond, with either the painkillers or his mind. But Tony must still be in some amount of pain, because he doesn't reply with the salacious retort Steve half expected to hear. The techs ease the last of the chest plate away, and Tony screws his eyes shut before groaning, tilting his head down and opening his eyes to look at... Huh. Well, that's not bad at all. Tony's chest, sticky and green with gel, is covered in mottled bruises, blue-black. But that looks like it. There's no blood. Nothing poking anywhere it shouldn't be. Steve's awfully familiar with injuries like that. It looks like Tony got hit all right, there's no denying that. And he'll probably be sore as hell, but he's not broken. It sure didn't feel like that when it happened.
Tony, he says cautiously, could you take a breath for me? Deep breath?
How come you never asked me to do anything fun? Tony says, but he inhales, obediently, as he focuses on the bond, just to make sure. Yeah, he's going to be absolutely fine. Ribs aren't even cracked. Lucky him. Maybe the bond is just that sensitive, Steve thinks. That's gotta be it. It just felt worse than it actually was. Either that or Tony's pain threshold is a lot lower than his. That explanation is utter contemplate, sitting uncomfortably. He hates to think of Tony being weak, not being as strong as he is, but, well, Tony was clearly sending him all the pain he felt. That's all. They'll just have to practice more in training.
Definitely no fun, Tony tells him. Sheesh.
Someone comes up to Tony with a bottle of pills and... Oh, Tony's going to love this. Strict instructions not to mix them with alcohol. Steve can feel Tony grousing. It's okay, he tells himself. Tony's going to be okay. He realizes he's smiling in relief as Tony's attention shifts away from him. Steve thighs, schools his face into impassivity, and goes back to the report. It's going to be a long night. There is nothing down the bond from Tony for the next few hours. Whenever Steve checks on him, his focus is turned outward. He's trying to distract himself. Steve catches glimpses of news websites, television programs, even an Ultimates report, all with an undercurrent of pain, as Tony's neck and chest, and therefore Steve's, twinge whenever he moves a little farther than he should. It's late by the time Steve finishes his reports and gets home. He suspects this is one of those nights that sleep is going to elude him. All he can see when he shuts his eyes is Thor the way they had found him, the way they had broken him and left him curled in on himself in the snow, and Christ, at this rate they're going to destroy everyone on the team, one by one. He shudders at the thought. Steve strips down to his boxes and grabs a particularly dry history book as he rolls into bed and pulls the covers up. Thucydides. Maybe it will lull him to sleep. It's better than thinking about what will become of the team. He's partway through the section on the Tyrannus seats when he feels Tony start to stir in the back of his mind. There is a blurred glimpse of Tony's surroundings, the bedroom in his penthouse, shadowed and empty, and then a wave of feeling. It's the same combination he's been getting from Tony all evening. Soreness, pain, exhaustion, sadness, a tinge of nausea. Tony feels like that a lot. Steve knows it's the chemo making him sick. There's less nausea than there often is. And then, low and growing louder, there's a heady, hopeful pulse of arousal. He's aware of the ghostly path of Tony's touch, as Tony's fingertips smooth over his own hip bone near his half-hard cock. Tony doesn't dare yet to slide his hand lower. He's savoring the anticipation. Oh God, over the time they've been bonded, he hasn't felt this from Tony before. He's had years of practice pushing back his own shameful impulses, so he hasn't yet given in to the sin of self-abuse while Tony's been in his mind. He's never wanted to broach the topic, so he's not sure if Tony has been doing him the courtesy of taking care of his needs while Steve's asleep, or if one of the dozen medication he's on, Steve sees a row of prescription bottles through Tony's eyes every morning, has somehow flattened his libido. But regardless of whatever filthy innuendo comes out of Tony's smart mouth, the odd paradox is that Tony hasn't seemed to be actually up for more than talk. Until now. The thrum of arousal down the bond grows more insistent, heating Steve's blood, and Steve's traitorous cock begins to rise, echoing Tony's interest. He can tell Tony hasn't actually done anything with his growing erection yet, but he can also tell that Tony's definitely looking forward to it. A fact of soul bonds that has been long enshrined into history, and one which Steve has quickly discovered the truth of for himself, is that the stronger the emotion, the more it overwhelms the bond. Fleeting thoughts and passing fancies can be brushed aside or even ignored without much trouble. But deeper and heavier feelings are all-consuming. The bond pulls their minds closer and closer. The same is true of sensations. And the baser the feeling, the more primal the sensation, the deeper it goes. Pain. Pleasure. Definitely pleasure. If Tony decides to get himself off, Steve knows already that his own body is going along for the ride, whether he wants to or not. He's going to have to feel everything Tony does to himself. Maybe he can get Tony to knock it off before anything else happens. Tony? He asks. Tony's mental voice is lazy, slow. Steve imagines the sound of it in Tony's mouth. Imagines Tony uttering long-practiced lines as he tumbles his latest conquest into bed.
Yeah? What can I do for you?
Trying not to think about what Tony could do for him, Steve makes his own voice in reply as stern as possible.
What exactly are you doing?
It's not like they don't both know, but Steve feels like pretending they could still observe these little rules of conversation is an important thing to do. Anarchy would thrive in their absence. He feels Tony smile.
Pretty sure you know exactly what I'm doing. Orgasms are nature's painkiller, darling. I'd really like the dopamine hit right about now. Probably better for me than the opioids anyway.
Steve doesn't know what dopamine or any of that is. He's so ignorant in so many ways, his brain reminds him, but he understands Tony's intent well enough. Maybe Tony doesn't understand. God, Tony can't do this to him. How can Tony do this to him?
You know I can feel what you're doing, right?
Steve says desperately. He doesn't mean it to sound that way, but of course he can't help sending back everything he feels, which at this point has to be barely restrained terror. He's expecting Tony to be reassuring, to be understanding, the way Tony's been since the soul bond started. He's expecting Tony to be nice about it, to give way now that he really sees how Steve feels about it. That's not what he gets. Down the bond there's an angry, twisted tangle of annoyance mixed with forced calm, a knot of frustration that Tony's trying to pull apart, still with the same pain and exhaustion as a backdrop. Steve supposes he's reached the end of Tony's patience. One breath, another, then the bond goes taut, high wire tension, probably as calm as Tony can make it.
Steve...
Tony says, very precisely, like he's trying very hard to stay level and reasonable.
I do know what consent is. I'm not that kind of asshole, and I especially don't want to be an asshole to you. You're my soulmate. That means a lot to me. I know you're not interested in anything with me physically. Unless you explicitly tell me otherwise, I will never touch you, okay? You have nothing to worry about. You have nothing to fear from me, I promise.
There is the faintest wave of reassurance, of encouragement, and a flash of sadness that Steve tells himself he must be imagining. and then the entire bond is swamped with bitterness.
I won't touch you. I won't touch anyone else either. That's how the soulmate thing works. I get that. I didn't get to choose this, but that's the deal. I'm okay with that. But what you're asking is that I also not touch myself for the rest of my life. Don't you think that's a little unfair?
The tiny part of Steve's mind that is somehow still capable of rationality can see Tony's point. Tony didn't sign up for a life of celibacy, and it's not like Steve's offering him any kind of relief for his needs. Tony's had a hell of a day. He's put one of his own teammates in custody. Of course he wants to relax, it makes sense. The rest of Steve's mind, however, is a stormy ocean of panic. He remembers Tony, what feels like a lifetime ago, before they knew, Tony smiling at him and flirting with him and saying, "You know you want to know what it's like." Everything in him knots up in terror because he can't want that, he can't be someone who wants that, that's not him. But they're stuck, aren't they? They don't have a choice. Whatever consent means for other people, it can't mean that for them. There's no way to have something that isn't shared, something that doesn't touch both of them. There's no way to say no. The soul bond is a switch flipped to yes, permanently.
We've been stuck since the beginning,
Tony says quietly, and even quieter, etched with something that might be anger.
You just didn't want to think about it.
There is a thigh down the bond, which stops and starts again like gears changing, and the link colors with regret and sorrow.
I know it's not fair, Tony murmurs. I know that. If you don't want me to, I won't, okay? I don't need it to live.
And then, the sword so slides that Steve isn't sure Tony knows he sawed it.
I just want you to be happy.
Tony's offer is sincere. He's not saying it so Steve will feel compelled to decline. This isn't one of those games. Steve can feel the open honesty of it. The bond is clear, unmarred by deceit. There's no lying here. If Steve says no, Tony won't do it, even though he wants to. He means it. He wants Tony to be happy too, even if he's terrified. It goes both ways. And Tony's dying. Who is Steve to deny him this? Sure, trying to ignore Tony won't be the most fun he's ever had in his life, but he's definitely had worse.
Go on then, he tells Tony. Enjoy yourself.
He can tell Tony wasn't expecting it, because Tony doesn't even try to make a joke about enjoying himself. Tony's surprise is a bright jacked shock down the bond, a warmth that is both delighted and disbelieving.
Steve, it's really okay if...
It's fine, Steve insists, and he knows Tony knows he means it.
I'll just sit here and read my book. It's okay.
Okay, Tony echoes cautiously. There is a pause, which Steve takes as his cue to pick up his book again. The bond attenuates a little as Tony's attention is elsewhere. And then the link blooms with arousal. The room around Tony is a little brighter. There are noises and flickering lights. He's watching television? There is a quiet, moody soundtrack and then the sound of a very feminine moan. Oh, Tony's watching pornography.
I thought you might like it better if I didn't treat you to my own personal fantasies directly from my brain,
Tony says in a tone somewhere between cheerful and very carefully kind. There is a suggestion, perhaps, that even Tony, the proverbial open book, is hesitant to share his most private fantasizing.
So I thought you'd prefer it if I put on something like this to entertain myself. Nice, sweet, straight, vanilla.
Tony pauses, while Steve contemplates whether he really wants to know what vanilla means in this context.
If you don't want this one, I have others. Or I can turn it off entirely, but that does run the risk of you being exposed to my spank bank. I cannot believe that is an actual phrase.
Steve can feel his nose wrinkling.
That's crude.
Tony laughs.
So am I, darling, if you hadn't noticed.
He wonders what pornography Tony owns that he thinks Steve wouldn't be able to handle. He wonders if Tony's giving him too little credit or too much. On the screen, a man and a woman are kissing. The view is a little hazy through the bond, but Steve can make out enough of the details. He sees why Tony called it sweet. They look like regular people, not overly made up for the camera, not the recipients of ridiculous amounts of plastic surgery, and they look like they're both honestly happy to be there. The man is tall and well-built, his hair a dishwater blonde that's a little darker than Steve's, and he's gently cradling the woman, a redhead, in his arms. As his hands begin to roam over her lingerie-clad body, she enthusiastically encourages him. It is indeed nice. If Steve were the sort of man who watched pornography, he'd probably pick something like this.
No, this one is fine, he tells Tony. I figured we both liked redheads,
Tony says with another laugh, this one with a tinge of wistfulness. Tony's always going to miss Natasha. He's always going to miss Gail. But this is their life now. Steve edges back a little to try to give Tony some privacy. Not that there is any.
He says, I'll just let you get to it.
Pulling away from the bond as much as he can, Steve breathes deeply and tries to focus on something, anything else. Right, he's reading a book. Next paragraph. He needs to not think about anything else. He can do this. The pressure of Tony's hands on his body is ghostly, insubstantial. It's enough that he can feel it, enough that he's aware that someone who isn't him has a hand on his hip. Another hand tracing gingerly over his bruised ribs, then higher up his chest, but not enough to provide more than a ticklish brushing of air across skin. Steve's vision blurs, the words in front of him falling away into Tony's vision. The woman on screen is sliding out of her lacy underthings, and Steve has the impression of smooth, pale curves, the rounded softness of her generous breasts, and despite himself, Steve's cock twitches in interest and excitement that's half dream, half memory.
Nice. Tony breathes to himself. Fuck, she's pretty. I forgot how much I like this one.
Tony's arousal is a fine tracery laid out over Steve's body, a pattern matching up, a fire in his veins that is and isn't his, the throbbing in his cock and a tightening ache in his balls. And already Steve's longing for relief. He grits his teeth and exhales. He can handle this. He can get through this. Then Tony pinches his nipple, hard, as his other hand drops to encircle the base of his cock and a starburst of bright pain pleasure ricochets down the bond. Gasping, breathless, helpless, Steve arches up off the bed, and there's nothing but his body and Tony's body linked together, his world narrowed to the sharp, perfect touch of Tony's fingers like it's a straight line to his cock. He's never even tried that. God, he didn't know that could feel so good. His cock throbs again, rock hard from just that touch, already slippery with pre-com.
Steve?
Tony asks. His mental voice is slow, thick with arousal, but there's concern there too.
Are you okay there?
Steve can't really control his response. Tony gets the entire emotional content of his mind. Stunned, aroused affirmation.
I didn't know it would feel like that, Steve says haltingly. I've never even tried.
Too late he realizes that Tony's going to know exactly how ignorant he is. Tony almost certainly thinks he was supposed to have done this. He's going to laugh at him. He's going to mock him.
What, this?
Tony asks. His mental voice is gentle. Tony's fingers trace over his own nipple again, a little more lightly to illustrate the touch but presumably spare him the teasing. Alone in his bed, Steve shivers with the pleasure of it.
I thought it was for women.
Steve says, and he's sure Tony gets a tangled mass of feelings and associations with it. Not right, not manly, not proper.
It's for anyone who likes it,
Tony says, easy, soothing. On screen, the video is still playing. The man is naked now too, and Steve is briefly conscious of Tony's admiration of this actor's muscled body, his jutting cock.
I like it, darling, but if you don't feel comfortable with it...
But doesn't it hurt? Steve asks, and he only feels a little ashamed for asking.
And you're already all bruised.
Ah, but this is a good pain, Tony says, which sort of makes sense and sort of doesn't. Tony pauses, and the next thought Steve gets from the bond is so very quiet that it's practically not conscious.
I like it harder.
There are flashing impressions from Tony, thoughts he can't quite hold back. There are ways to make it harder, clips like clams tightening down on his chest, loved and remembered pain as an unseen hand strikes flat across his ass and then a blow stings his cheek, handcuffs weigh his wrist down. In Tony's memories, none of it hurts, not like it should. It's strange and terrifying, and Steve realizes he's still hard, and maybe that's even more awful. Maybe this is what Steve was supposed to be scared of. Then Tony's attention shifts again to the video, which is both better and worse, because on the video the woman is on her hands and knees on the bed. The man behind her is entering her. The camera switches to an extreme close-up. A view more intimate than any participant would see, an angle a voyeur would love, slick flesh sliding against flesh pushing inside. The woman moans, full-throated. The man thrusts again and the camera switches focus to his cock as it plunges in and out of her. Steve's not looking. Steve's never looked. He's been so good all his life. He's always kept himself from looking, even from thinking. God, except when it was Tony. Oh, he looked when it was Tony.
Oh yeah, that's the stuff,
Tony murmurs, entranced by the video. And Tony's other hand finally slides up his cock as he pinches his nipple again. Steve can feel Tony's hand like it's wrapped around his own cock, an airy slide of phantom pressure and sensation, tied all the way up, expertly squeezing around the head of his cock. The thing of pain pleasure in his nipple focuses all the way down in his balls, and Steve wonders if he's going to come, just like this, with no one touching him. It's so good Steve can't stand it, and yet somehow not enough. He wants more, he needs more. It's a little too ghostly like this, the pressure frustratingly just this side of perfect. So much for reading his book. He has to do something. He can't resist this. He can't overcome this, not when everything within him is telling him, yes, that this is right, that this is good, that his body and Tony's are meant to be joined as their minds are. There's no way to fight this. It's as inescapable as the pain had been when Tony took that hit. He feels like he's going to die if he doesn't touch himself. He's never been this desperate for it before. He didn't know it was even possible to feel like this. He has to. He has to. He throws the book he was reading on the floor, kicks the covers off and shoves his boxers down. He shuts his eyes. He doesn't want to look at himself and he doesn't want Tony to see him. He doesn't want to know what Tony would think watching him.
Steve?
Tony asks. He's aware distantly of Tony's concern. He's also aware of Tony's hand gliding up and down his cock, too far away, and it's not enough, and he can make it be enough. He knows what to do. Steve wraps his hand around his cock. It's like the moment they bonded all over again, but this time nothing hurts. There is no dormant connection to be ripped open. Everything is there, waiting, linked up, a line joined back on itself, a circle of pleasure spiraling upward. Each movement either of them make feeds it. The sensation of Tony's hand mirrored on his own cock, so far away, draws closer, becomes more intense. With his eyes shut, Steve would swear Tony was touching him too.
Oh God, Steve!
Tony chokes out and he can feel Tony's delight and wonder akin to his own. Steve arches up into his fist and pumps his own cock just the way he likes it, on the rare occasions when he lets himself give in to this. His grip is a little loose because he's always been sensitive after the serum. Anything more is almost always too much. But Tony, of course, likes it hard, and when the rhythm sinks up after a few stuttering tries, he's groaning with every stroke as Tony's fingers lock tight around his cock, thumb swiping over the sensitive head. Steve gasps and moans, and he's not even sure if it hurts. He doesn't remember what pain is. All he knows is that he doesn't want it to stop. Tony's free hand pinches his own nipple then, savagely hard, and Steve cries out. His free hand bunches in the sheet, searching for someone who isn't next to him, as everything cascades into a waterfall of pleasure, lightning down his spine right to where his balls are drawn up tight. God, he's so close already. There's another mental tendril of inquiry. Steve? Again? Steve says, not even aware of deciding to say it. Harder. Tony just laughs and the next pinch is harder, so startlingly good that Steve forgets a second what his other hand is supposed to be doing, but Tony's rhythm never falters. He needs more than this. Without thought, his own free hand has slid down his body to cradle his balls the way he likes, and it only occurs to him after he does it that Tony might object. Tony might not like the sensation, or he might think it strange that Steve does. Steve ventures a thought. Is that okay? The only thing he's aware of is Tony's pleasure. Tony has long since stopped paying attention to his movie. That feels amazing, sweetheart, Tony pants out. God, you're absolutely perfect. Don't stop. The fact is not lost on Steve that Tony is the most appreciative person Steve has ever been involved with, and they're not even in the same room. It's like having a pair of extra hands for both of them at the same time. They're touching themselves, teasing themselves, and whatever one of them does, the other feels it. Steve rolls his balls in his hand, and Tony's hand tightens on his cock in response. He can feel his own release draw closer and closer. So soon, too soon, and surely Tony's going to mind. Surely Tony's going to hate that he can't control himself. I'm going to come, he says frantically. There's no way to stop. God, Tony's not stopping. Steve's going to embarrass himself. I'm sorry, I'm really going to come. He can feel Tony's dazed, appreciative laugh. Maybe Tony's not mad after all. Oh, darling, Tony says, the endearment is fond now and his tone eager. I certainly hope you're going to. Tony strokes himself roughly, his grip tighter than anything Steve would use, urging both of them onward, higher and higher. It's amazing, it's incandescent, and pleasure lights Steve up all over, sparking down his nerves, and his cock jerks in his fist, and he's coming, and it's better than anything he's ever felt. Tony's climax rises up just as Steve is coursing down from his own peak. He can feel it in the bond, pulling them closer and closer. Then it's like the bond doesn't exist anymore, like there's no separation and he is Tony and there's nothing between them as Tony gasps and groans and arches up. Tony's ecstasy, mirrored and doubled, carries Steve back up with him, and Steve's still coming, trembling, as his cock spurts again and again until Tony is finally done. Steve sprawls out across his bed, satisfied as the last of the pleasure ebbs into an easy warmth down the bond. He thinks maybe he's smiling. Thank you, Tony says. Best I've ever had. Definitely the most fun I've ever had by myself in an empty room. That was lovely. His mind is slow and sleepy. He's blissful, just like he wanted. Steve can feel the odd sensation of Tony wiping himself up with as little effort as possible. Tony's already descending rapidly into sleep. There is a parting thought, almost a dream, and Steve is sure Tony didn't mean to think it where he could hear it. Imagine what it would be like if I actually touched you. The thought drifts off. Tony is asleep. Steve's alone in his mind. It's beginning to feel strange, being alone. Steve thinks it's definitely the best he's ever had. Not that he has a lot of basis for comparison, even on his own. He gets up to get a washcloth, and that's when the panic hits him. Steve's no stranger to regretting this. It is, after all, an act of self-abuse, a mortal sin. He struggled with it. Of course he has, but now? Horrified, disgusted, he stares down at himself, at the mess he's made, cum splattering his chest. Even if Tony wasn't really there, Tony was still there, and oh God, he liked it. He couldn't even stop himself from giving in and joining him. He liked it so much, he asked Tony to keep going. God, he practically begged him. It was so good, it was perfect. How was he supposed to resist in the face of something that feels like that? Shaking, he sits down hard on the edge of the bar stop. The washcloth drips in his hand. Tony would say he's not supposed to resist. Tony would say that this is what the universe intends for them, but it's not what Steve was raised to believe, and it's not as if the church has changed its position in the intervening years. He did check. Maybe everything he was raised to believe is wrong, he thinks, and that thought is so terrifying that he'd give up everything he knows for this fleeting pleasure. He wants it again. Even worse, Tony wants it again. Tony wants to touch him, he said so. Steve folds over himself where he sits as his muscles lock up in a spasm of terror. Tony would want to... God, what if Tony wants... It's all too easy to picture Tony holding him down, Tony taking him, the bond making him enjoy this terrifying violation the same way it made him enjoy this. It would make Steve want it. And who would he be then? Everyone would know, wouldn't they? They'd look at him and they'd know. Steve can imagine the taunts now. Captain America the queer. Captain America the fairy. Captain America takes it up the ass. It wouldn't be anything he hadn't heard in the schoolyard a decade and a lifetime ago, but this time it would be true. Maybe it was always true, he thinks, and his stomach roils, and he has to breathe shallowly for fear of being sick. This is what Tony meant. Even before the bond, Tony looked at him and knew. Tony looked at him and saw this within him. He can't do this. What is he going to do? What in the world is he going to do? How is he even going to be in the same room with Tony? He'll have to sit there and look Tony in the eye and know that Tony knows everything in his mind, that Tony has borne witness to his most private and intimate thoughts. He'll have to work with Tony knowing that. They can't do this again. They can't. At least he probably has a few hours before Tony gets up. In the other room, the shield emergency comm goes off. The one for the Ultimates. Oh. This, Steve thinks, is going to be bad.
You can't find him, the way is dim. You feel like giving up. You ache for her, rest assured. It's never too late for love. You say you're tired. How I hate to hear. I've felt your pain, and I know your sorrow. You could try to let the past slip away, live for today. Don't stop believing.